Hi, this is Carrie Brownstein.
This is DJ Premier.
This is Darren Aronofsky.
You got the RZA right here.
Rose McGowan.
Right here.
Aisha Tyler.
A Tribe Called Quest.
Fred Armisen.
Fritz Paul.
Javier Munoz. Seth Meyers.
Frankie Cosmos.
Flying Lotus.
Hi, we're Chaim. And you're listening to the Talk House Podcast. Ow!
Hello and welcome to the Talk House Podcast. I'm Josh Modell. This week's conversation features a couple of names you almost certainly know, because each of these guys has had a pretty incredible career in music. Richard Marx and Jacob Dylan. Marx, of course, wrote and performed some of the most indelible pop hits of the late 80s and early 90s, including Endless Summer Nights, Hold On to the Nights, and the super smash Right Here Waiting, which comes up in this conversation. But even as the era of mullets and frosted jeans faded, Marx couldn't be stopped. Or rather, Marx's songs couldn't be stopped. He's continued releasing music over the years, and his influence can be felt deeply to this day. Just check out the audio and visual vibe of John Mayer's latest album, which basically pays tribute to Marx. And it's not just music. Marx recently released a funny, candid memoir called Stories to Tell, in which he details some of the incredible memories he's made in the music business over the years. And that's where Jacob Dylan entered the picture, as you'll hear. Though the two didn't know each other, Dylan went on Joe Rogan's podcast recently to praise Marx's book, and a friendship was born. Now, Dylan is no slouch in the music department either. You can't be with that family name. He's been the main creative force behind the Wallflowers for the past 30 years, releasing 7 albums under that name, plus 2 solo albums, and of course, crisscrossing the globe, playing for tons of people. The latest Wallflowers record, Exit Wounds, just came out, and its lyrics and vibe are reflective of the times we're living in, which is to say it's a bit harrowing, but also incredibly catchy. A bunch of the songs feature Shelby Lynn on backing vocals as well, which is a great bonus. They get into that in a little bit as well. Check out a little bit of The Dive Bar in My Heart.
Once in a while you still come around. You look me over, you look me down. It's just you and that lazy bar back. In your favorite little clown.
Elsewhere in this chat, the two songwriters talk about process, about how writing a book is different than writing a song, about a special moment Marx recently dedicated to his ailing mother, and how Barbara Streisand has no regrets about not recording Marx's biggest hit for herself. Enjoy.
Jacob Dylan, first thing I want to say is thank you to your face. Nobody's going to be watching this. They're going to only be listening to it, but I can see Jacob Dylan's face, and it's my first opportunity to thank him. For a few weeks ago, he was on this little, like, not listened to podcast called The Joe Rogan Experience. And at one point, Rogan asked Jacob, like, how he likes to wind down when he's not working, when he's not touring, whatever. And Jacob said, yeah, I like to read. I like to read memoirs. And he gave my memoir, which had just come out like a day or two before that, a shout out and was very complimentary. And it was so nice. And we didn't know each other. And so, to be honest with you, my first feeling was one of suspicion. Like, because, like, why is somebody I don't know being nice? I don't know about you, but I feel like even though my closest friends in the world happen to be other musicians and songwriters, I'm going to sound like such a dick when I say this. From the time I started making records back in 1912, I loved that I then, once I started having a little bit of success, I loved that I had an opportunity sometimes to reach out to someone to compliment them, even people I didn't know. And sometimes it would just be me sending a fax back in the fax days, or calling them, getting a number from a manager and just calling and just saying, hey, I just wanted to tell you, I listened to your new record and I thought it was amazing and, you know, congratulations. And I always found that people were so sort of taken aback by that. And it's happened to me in return a few times, but I feel like there's not a whole lot of that sort of, especially people we don't know. I mean, in your case, you took, I don't know, 2 or 3 full minutes in the middle of a really, really important plug for you, and you shined a light on me, and I really appreciate it. I thought it was really badass and cool.
Well, that's nice of you, but it's just genuine, you know. But I do know what you mean, that, I mean, musicians, as much as we're supportive, unfortunately, are also very competitive.
Yeah, yeah.
Strangely. Yeah. And you tend to give compliments and shout outs to people that you know, because that's just kind of it's a bit of a code with other, you know, with players and musicians. But no, that was just genuine. I don't have much of that competitive nature really with people I do or don't know. I had just flown to Austin and I had bought the book day before. And that's what I do on a plane. I read.
Me too.
The newer, take out your iPad and all that stuff. I don't do any of that kind of stuff. So it's either sleep or read.
Yeah.
Sometimes a combination.
Yeah.
But
same here.
You know, the book was perfect, and it's your book is great. And you know, I'm sure you've gotten lots of compliments. And it's a ballsy endeavor to write a book. I mean, I think, I don't know, how long did you work on that?
I mean, I got serious about it maybe a year and a half ago, you know, like right before the pandemic, maybe, which, you know, the one of the only blessings of the pandemic was that it gave me no more excuses not to dig in and finish it. But the nucleus of it was 7 or 8 years ago. I started doing more touring as a solo acoustic show. And in doing that, I knew that I wasn't as worried or concerned about performing the songs as I was what was going to happen in between the songs. Because to me, that's really the show. I come from as an audience member, you know, I can go see someone or a band and be blown away by the musicianship. But if I'm going to go and sit in a room and have that experience, I kind of want to feel like I'm hanging out with them a little bit. I want to feel like I'm being interacted with. And fortunately or unfortunately, I've had some wacky shit happen to me throughout my life. And most of it's pretty funny and self-deprecating, and some of it's embarrassing. And I loved having the opportunity in a solo acoustic show to tell a bunch of those stories, because I wanted people to walk away feeling like they really got their money's worth musically, but I also wanted them to laugh and have fun. And so a friend of mine who had seen the show said, you know, every one of those stories you tell in between songs is a chapter of a book. So the initial idea was I was just going to write stories about my career and people I've worked with and funny shit that's happened to me. But then, to be totally honest, I didn't get serious about it until I got a frickin' book deal. And then I got serious about it. And Simon & Schuster really encouraged me to write a little bit more about my life. And I think, you know, as you could tell, without even knowing me, I still maintained the integrity of my privacy. I didn't write anything that I was uncomfortable talking about. And I kept a lot of stuff to myself, because who says I can't? Just because it's a memoir, you know?
Yeah, you want a follow-up book.
Yeah, more stories to tell.
Yeah, well, it's quite an undertaking. I mean, it's not a song. In a song, you're allowed to bounce all over time and perspectives and first person and third person. You can go, there's nothing linear necessarily about a song, but a book has to be something different. And I don't know that they relate. I mean, your memories may not be enough to make a great book, because you still got to write it. And I don't find they're very connected. If you were asked me to just write a memoir just about a tour, like, I would find that very complicated, difficult.
I thought going into it that it would be that way. I didn't write with anybody else. I wrote every word myself, and I didn't even do, honestly, that much rewriting. Just little bits and pieces as I would reread and reread. And there are even still things in the book. When I got the final book, when there was no more, you know, room to change or any more time to change, it was when I was reading the audiobook that there were a handful of things I went, fuck, I could have fleshed that out better. I think every author goes through that. But what I found was, in writing songs, I feel a sense of rules, if you will, of construct and the way I approach writing a lyric. I feel, for good or bad, I feel a commitment to adhere to not the rules, that's a bad word for it, but, you know, I come from an old school of songwriting like you do, and it feels like constructing a lyric, it needs some, what's the word I'm looking for?
Certainly, if you're hoping for music to be heard by a lot of people, if you want to art yourself out of the business, you could be as, you know, esoteric yes. and as abstract as you want to
exactly.
be. You just will be singing to a much more narrow audience. And I believe in that too. I don't believe that expressing yourself is enough in a song. I mean, I admire the craft of it too, and putting it together. And I don't think artists are better. I don't think artists are better because they're more honest or purging. Or
no.
Still got to put it together in 4 minutes that, like, makes sense
right.
to me listening, you know?
Right. But the difference I found was, when you're working on a couplet and you're halfway there, there are, you know, self-imposed restrictions. It's got to rhyme this way, and it's got to sing this way. And it's not enough to just write a piece of poetry. It's got to sing well. It's got to fit the melody the way you want. With writing a book, even if you were to write a book about your last tour, you have all the information at your disposal already in your brain. It's just a matter of a way of the way you want to tell that story. With writing a song, there's so much of it that remains in the ether until we pull it down, or until it comes through us. When, you know, we're sitting there searching for that one line or the back half of that chorus, or when it's you're just wondering when you're going to find it. With writing a book about yourself, the information is logged. It's in you. It's just a matter of how you want to phrase those sentences. But I actually ended up finishing the book and finding myself craving writing songs again. I wasn't as mystified by the act of writing a book as I am writing a song. Every time I write a new song, I go, fuck, I can't believe that we just wrote a song, or I just wrote a song. Again, I don't know how many thousands of times it's happened, but I've never lost my wonder.
You know, I'm not aware of a higher achievement for any one person who's a songwriter. Because while you're writing it, you think you're never going to write another song again. It's just, you're done. I don't think everything that falls out of me is worth recording or good. If I have a record that has 10 songs on it, I probably only wrote 12. I don't have 18 songs.
Yeah.
I don't really finish the ones I don't think are going to be great. If I don't think it's going to be something worthwhile, really strong, I just don't want extra okay songs laying around. But you know, while you're doing it and it's a struggle, and you know, you're looking for that one word, and it's the phonics of it. Like you said, there's some words that just don't sing well, no matter how much it seems like the perfect word. It's just not a pleasant word. The beauty of words is really important, the way they lock together. It's not only what you want to say, but it's how you say it, what words you choose. And somebody else might say, well, that's kind of constricting. Don't you want to just say what you want to say? Well, you can do that in your journal if you want, other places, but it's a song.
Right.
You know, it's a song. So it's a different beast entirely. And it's not too hard to do. It's frustrating, but you always end up finding it, you know, eventually, no matter how obsessed you become with it, eventually you find it. But yeah, different than a book, like you said, everything is logged in there. You just have to find a way to, you know, bring it out and organize it and what you choose to say and don't choose to say. But I also don't know how your memory seems really good. I don't have a journal, things like that. So if I was to write something just about something that happened 20 years ago, like, I don't really know that I could, I don't know that I'd have all the memories.
I only a handful of times I texted people who are still in my life, and I'd send them what I'd written and said, this is what happened, right? This is what she said, right? Because sometimes, just like it's the old game of telephone, you know, and where somebody tells you a joke, and then that joke comes back to you 3 years later, and it's nothing, it doesn't even resemble, the setup is different, the punchline's different, that I was wrong.
I think rule number one, you know, you write a book, is quote dead people. You know that, right?
Absolutely, because what the fuck are they going to do about it?
Speaking of what you just said before about people's memories being different, have you ever been around people you've been with for a long time and they're telling a story in the room and you're listening, you're like, no, that happened to me.
Totally.
I guess I've been telling the story for 20 years and you've heard it for 20 years because you're in the crew or something like that. But now I'm listening to you entertain everybody and you got confused because you've heard it so many times that it happened to you. And then you confront them and they're like, no, I think that happened to me. You're like, no. I've been told that was me.
No.
We cannot possibly, we both cannot possibly have seen the same thing. That's my story.
Exactly. And especially when the whole room is going, wow, that's an amazing story. And then you're going to look like nothing but a dick by going, that actually happened to me. Everybody's going to think you're the crazy one.
Yeah. You're the one person that's not laughing or entertained because you're sitting there just brewing with like, dude, like, how did that happen? How did it just osmosis become your story? And then the obvious part is when you confront them and usually they can't defend it. They go, no, that happened to me.
And then you're like, I know you think it happened to you, but here's why you think it happened to you, and here's why it did not happen to you. I have questions about your new album, Exit Wounds. The Wallflowers put out a new album, everybody, and I'm very pleased to say that I get to chat with you about this. I'm pleased because I really, really, really like the record a lot. I've been living with it for the last 2 days, and I think it's some of my favorite songs you've ever written, that I have lots of questions, starting with, I used to be a credits junkie, and then over time, as credits became more and more difficult to access, I kind of just got out of the habit. Sometimes I'll make a point to try to go online and find out who wrote that song or who produced that song or who played that guitar solo or whatever, but it's not as readily available as back in the days when you'd get a CD and you'd read the liner notes, right? I used to love reading liner notes, but I used to really love writing the liner notes to my albums. And over the years, I realized that nobody gives a shit. I really do still give a shit. So in some of my researching and listening while I was listening to the album and in between, I knew that you have a history of writing alone, but I also know that you've done records where you've, at least it's been credited to you and the band or you and other people. This album, according to my Google search, you wrote every song by yourself, as you have on certain other albums. I'm really personally curious, as someone who's, I think maybe I would say 80% of my catalog is self-written by myself, but I've also collaborated a lot, not as much with my own records, but written with so many other artists and other songwriters. I'd love you to talk to me about how you feel about co-writing versus just digging in and doing it all on your own.
I do co-write now and then, and I've had good results, but it depends what you're looking for. I don't need help writing songs. A lot of times people collaborate because they're looking to pitch songs or have successful songs, or hopefully the best reason to do it is because you like another writer and you just want to, you know, 1 + 1 = 3, just get together and write something that you couldn't do on your own. But, you know, I mostly have written all the songs on my record. I mean, truthfully, there's been a few moments where other people had writing credit, but, well, first of all, I don't think people cared about that, getting writing credit too much until they started looking at royalty checks and started seeing how bands are divided and how jobs are divided. And suddenly everybody wants to be a songwriter. I would never show up on a record and say, you know, I want to play drums now, because that's, I mean, exactly. So my thing, you know, I feel it's, especially in bands, you know, it's, yeah, it's like a basketball squad, a team, you know, it's like not everybody gets to, you know, dribble the ball and everybody gets to shoot. And that's kind of what bands are. Yeah. You got to play to your strengths. What does everybody do? And that's always been my thing, is the songwriting portion. That's the heavy lifting that I do. And other people throughout the years have done extremely valuable things as well. But it's okay to admit, you know, I mean, I always had an instinct for writing songs and I always wanted to. I don't think it's totally appropriate 25 years into a band or something, wake up at 45 and say, I'd like to write now also. Well, I've got like 30 years ahead of you, you know, and it's not that easy.
Right.
And I don't need three chords. Right. You don't need to throw D, A, and G at me. Like, that's not co-writing. That's different. That's something else. That's jamming, maybe. But I do like co-writing. I don't have the best, I mean, I don't do it a lot, really, honestly, because if the idea starts to sound like it's getting somewhere and it's good, I usually want to leave and go finish it myself if I think it's going to be really good, because I'm just really particular, you know, and I've written with people and I've had to, you know, Gary Lewis from the Jayhawks is a good friend of mine. I remember we were writing together years ago and he would just drop out of line and I would just keep focusing on it, trying to fix it and tweak it. And he's like, what are you doing? I said, I'm just hung. I'm going to fix that line. And he's like, why? And I said, because it's kind of a soft rhyme or something. I want to pin it down a little better. And he'd say, well, you shouldn't do that. Why don't you just let it be as it is? And it was interesting. I mean, it bothered me intensely at the time, but I realized later, like, no, there's something to be said for that too, to not micromanage, which is what I do. I overthink, but that's just the only way they come to me. And if something is good that's happening, I usually want to hoard it for myself and go finish it, because my process isn't really fun to do in front of somebody else.
Totally. Oh, God. Wow. I haven't heard anybody say that so succinctly. It's like you got in my brain. I can't. It's really, really painful and unpleasant for me to co-write lyrics. There's a really great songwriter in Nashville named Trey Bruce. And I, first of all, love him as a person. Like, he's just such a soulful cat and we're pals. But when I write with him, I think that we complement each other really well and it's fluid. And we're both kind of approaching it from the same standpoint that you just described, which is we're willing to like annoy the other and beat each other up and go, it's like that old line, you know, sometimes you got to give up good to get great, or Bono's line, great hangs back until good's tired, which is another good line, but that's really rare, except for this one guy I can think of. I don't enjoy co-writing lyrics because my process is I need to go, and I want to know what your version of this is if you feel like talking about it, but I need to go away and I need to be alone. Sometimes it means that I need to put myself in a room at 4:30. It could go, fuck it. I'm going to write this. I'm going to make this happen. I'm going to stay in there and I'm going to really slug it out. And other times it's just like, I need to just go on a hike and I'll find the lines that I want behind that tree or under that rock or behind that cloud. And I just sort of, but I can't do that with other people. I need to just be alone and do my thing.
You know, moving is really good. I've always thought, you know, like what you just said, you can spend 6 hours in a room working on one phrase, or you can just take a 15 minute walk.
Yep.
I know we made a record in 2012. The band, I remember there was a car that would take everybody to the studio that was, you know, 20 minutes away in a car. And I just would walk every day. I'd walk to the studio, like, I don't know, a couple miles, because that's where I would get everything done. It's a deadline. There's the studio. I got to be there, say 1 o'clock. I got about an hour and a half. And I know you give me 8 hours in a hotel room, I'm not going to get it done. But you give me like an hour and a half walk, because you're not sitting in the four walls in any kind of confines. And when you're moving, you know, you have all these different assets are working for you. Your peripherals working, and everything's moving. So your brain just really can't stop. It's just like it's just nonstop motion with your brain. And but that's different for everybody. I mean, but it's also, you know, as far as co-writing, that's, you know, writing songs is the part I like the most. It's like my favorite thing to do. It's why I do this. So it's not that I don't want to share with anybody or do it with other people, because I have and I do. It's just, it's the part I really like the most. Why? I mean, I want to do it. I want that song to be finished. Right. And I want to have this song that I took out of the sky from nowhere a day before there was nothing on the page. Like that's, and then I want to go in the studio and hear it come out of the speakers. I mean, that's the part I like the most. So, but there's different reasons, of course. There's Brill Building, those kind of writers, of course, in Nashville, they do it plenty, but they're kind of think tanking songs for everybody to hear. And there's no real identity or personality in some of those songs. And they can be really great. And we all love some of those songs, but you also know that when you hear them, that there's no really nobody home. I'm sorry, it does not take 8 people to write a song. It just doesn't.
Right.
You know, maybe
right.
two.
It doesn't take 6 people. It doesn't take 4 people.
2, maybe 3. But at that point, you're just all getting credit because, you know, it was my idea to say we do this. The song set in the summer.
I obviously completely agree, but I feel like I look around and I hear songs that I like, that I think are really well-crafted songs, and I'll go, oh, fuck, there's 9 writers on it. And it's laughable to me. But I've gotten to the point where instead of sort of railing against it, or I just go, well, that's just what it is these last few years. It's writing by committee, and this is how it's done. And, you know, I feel bad for the people who really did the heavy lifting in that room or brought in the idea that really is what's great. Because it's hard enough to make a living as a songwriter in the last 10 years. Now you got to split your song with 8 people who didn't do fuck all. It's really lame. But at the end of the day, I think you and I probably feel the way we do about it because we come from a time where most people who are like on the charts or having success as songwriters right now really maybe have never had the experience of just sitting in a room or taking a walk and writing a song and coming and having a like, oh, I wrote this song.
I think there's room for all of it. And I think any which way it gets done is probably fine.
Yeah.
But it's just not lost on yourself or me when you hear some of those songs that, you know, there's nobody home. There's 8 people.
Right.
Home. There's 8 people in that apartment. And it's just, you know, like, so you're not really getting, that's why you don't feel anything. You don't feel anybody. Usually it's a song about entertainment. It's a song about America or trucks or, you know, beers.
Right.
When I say think tank, it's like, well, that's what it is. People are getting together and brainstorming. What do people want to hear? And just that in itself is just not a place that I respond to. I don't have a problem with it, but I just don't understand it because to me, like, no, that's the part I like the most. I don't know why that's not the most important part to you, but that's how it is. Right. I mean, that's how growing up and still, like, I'm not particular about genres. I like, you know, I can listen to any music because I just want to feel something from somebody. And I always like the best songwriters. Grooves never moved me as much. Vibe didn't ever move me as much. Outfits didn't move me as much. Just, is there a good song in there?
Yeah.
I've had this recently. You pop the radio on, whatever you can find to listen to, and everything sounds really good on the song. The recording is really good. The fuzzed out vocal and everything's working, but there's just, I'm not feeling anything. And the song is just incredibly okay.
What was the process for you on this last album? Because Butch Walker co-produced with you or produced the record? Or
he produced, yeah.
How was that experience? And what was your, like, did you pull any songs or pieces of songs that were from a while back? Or was it sort of like, okay, I'm going to go in and make a new album in such and such amount of time, and I'm going to write a new album? Or was it drawing from older ideas that had been kind of tucked away?
I tend to do most of my writing when there's, you know, a record or there's, you know, a purpose or a deadline that they're going to get recorded and we're going to hear them. I don't really have a home studio. I mean, I can make the most primitive demos you can imagine, but that's all I need. Those are basically just voice memos because I'm imagining going to the studio. So you keep track of everything, however you can do that on paper or, you know, small demos, however you can do that. But probably like yourself, I'd had probably out of these songs, maybe 3 of them were hanging around for a while. And then you have to, when you take them and you update them and you bring them and you put them with the body of work that's the new stuff, you have to adjust them and tweak them a bit so they sit well. Because maybe 5 years ago, your word choices would be different than today. That's when most of that heavy lifting gets done, is when it's time to make a record. And you just accumulate everything. It's just too much, I find, to do all the time. It's too consuming. I don't think you're pleasant to be with. I don't think anybody would want to be around me if I was doing that all the time. So I just tend to keep all my stuff together. And then you get isolated for the time when it's time to put the record together, you know. But I'm never finished. You were saying about the book, about doing the reading, the audio portion of it, saying that you could have said this or said that about a certain story. Like, I still feel that about songs I wrote 20 years ago. I still hear a song, like, I'll rehearse for a tour and I'll be working on songs and I'll be thinking, I cannot believe that that's what I said in that song. It should have been this. Like, I'm never really, it's pretty unpleasant.
Yeah.
You hear something like, you know, really, that's the word I wanted to use? I was sitting right there in front of it. And like, but that's because 5 years makes, it's a big difference in time for you as a writer. You know, you don't think anything's really happening, but that's why records, at least my records, there's always a similar language on most of my records because those are the words I'm interested in that time. And, you know, people have asked on this record, horses or trains, whatever. Like, I don't know. Those are just images that were coming to me now, and I'm not going to think about it. Just that's why they came up a lot right now. I don't know. I'm not sure why.
But also battle and weaponry. And I mean, the title of the album makes total sense. When I was really digging into the songs and reading along with the lyrics and the pictures you were painting, I love assuming that I know that somebody's maybe going through something when I'm listening to their songwriting. When I myself have written, you know, a whole album that sounds like I was about to check myself into, you know, a mental health facility, when I happened to be in a really good place, it was just, that's what I felt like writing. I tell people all the time, no matter how good a place you might be in or feel that you're in emotionally, if you've had experience with depression or with darkness or any of that stuff, I can call on that shit in a second. I don't prefer to live in that place, but it really is where the better poetry lives, I think. I don't want to assume this of you, but you think you've said it all about that thing that happened 7 years ago. I've written 4 songs about it over the last 2 albums. I'm done. It's purged. And then you go, oh, this is about that. This is still about that. That well is still deep for that period of time when I was fucked up or when I was really going through it. And so, I long-winded way of saying, when I was listening to this new album, I, knowing what I know, that you can't judge what somebody's going through based upon their most recent album, I felt like you were purging. You were coming out of a place.
Well, yeah, I mean, we always are, I suppose, and it just depends. I mean, that's a whole lot there. What you said is true, though, that if you ever experienced anything, you can recall that. It's not, and that's what songwriters do. I believe we have the liberty to, you know, assimilate and be empathetic to other people and walk in their shoes in our 3.5 minutes of a song. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But I'm also not really a huge fan when people, you know, want to suggest that being really honest about their troubles. I mean, you can do it, but that, you know, I don't know why you have to tell me that, because I'm just gonna listen to the songs. And if you did it well, I'll probably feel that. And you're not gonna get extra points for being honest. It's not like, this is a medium. This is an art form. That's your diary you're talking about, and you should go at it, you know, but you don't get points for exposing yourself or purging. That's just not how I necessarily feel about it. But that being said, you're in all your songs. You can't avoid it. You may not think you're working through things. And that's certainly, like, I've gotten better at, while I self-edit to a nauseating degree, I've gotten better just letting things sit. You know, if you look at it on the paper and you ask yourself, what does that even mean? Well, you're spooking the whole thing. You know, so I've learned to appreciate that came to me. It didn't come to anybody else today. That arrangement of those 12 words only came to me. I'm not exactly sure why. I know there's something in there that I feel that it's implying something. I can now sit here and dissect it, but why? Maybe just let it sit. I remember early on hearing Keith Richards say that he doesn't really write songs. He channels them. And I always thought, like, I don't know. Nobody's writing my songs for me. I don't know what that means. I mean, I want, what channel are you on? Like, I want that, you know, but I do. but I think I know what he meant now. I get it better, which is just, you know, the saying, just get out of your own way and let these things happen.
I think the concept of us channeling them or the songs coming through us is, and you're leading me to this other thing, which is one of my most confounding yet pleasant experiences is when I do look back, like you said, when you're rehearsing a song or for whatever reason, if I'm looking at an old lyric or something, and I'll truly not have any recollection of how I even arrived at that. Like, why did I write that? Like, I don't even remember. It's not like I could go, oh yeah, that thing happened and then it triggered this memory of this. And so I wrote that line.
Yeah. Again, but I'm going to quote Paul Simon but another quote. I forget what he said. I'm going to paraphrase, but you know, he's one of my favorite writers, Paul Simon. He's just a really gifted writer, I find, but not just all the songs we know, they're memorable, but he says something that I thought, I kind of knew he was doing that, and I'd already kind of tried to learn from it. But when he said it very succinctly, then I got it, which was, you got to give a listener a gimme here and there in a song. It can't be all dense and heavy and thoughtful and too many, you know, first of all, not too much wordplay and that kind of stuff. Well, so when you've just got like 3 lines of something that's a little bit abstract and out there, well, then you give them a softball, bring them back in. You balance out, because you don't want one or the other entirely. I'm sure you get asked the same thing. Is it hard for you to sing certain songs? And honestly, like, no, it's not. It's not. Like, I'm able to entertain and just sing a song. And I don't relive the songs every time I sing them, no matter what happened at the time of writing them. I'm done. I wrote it. I moved on. singing right. a song does not conjure up the feeling again. Not to me.
Not to me either.
I know some people say it's too hard to sing that song, but you know what? I'm an entertainer, really, too, and I'm able to sing a song, mine or someone else's, and you'd be surprised what I can think about while I'm singing the song.
You remind me of something. I'd like to just do a little sidebar here. I lost my father really tragically in 97 when I was 33, and my mom and I have always been really, really close, and my mom is at the end of her life now. This is the home stretch, and you know, we have her living with us, and it's sad and heartbreaking, but also beautiful, and she's 85. She's funny, and she's cool, and so a year and a half or 2 years after my father died, I wrote a song as a present for my mom. And it's called Thanks to You. And it was just sort of a little love letter to my mom. And it was never a single or any of that stuff. It was really just me writing it to her, but I did record it. And so I had never performed it live. And I thought, fuck, it's Mother's Day. This live stream thing's happening. I want to do this for my mom. So I sent the recording to the band so they could learn it. And then at rehearsal, at soundcheck that day, we went through it. And of course, the guys killed it. And I played piano on it. And as I was rehearsing it, some of the words that I hadn't really thought of in 20 years caught in my throat. Like, oh, what the oh, shit. I got to do this on this live stream in a few hours. And now I'm starting to think about it. Like, I don't want to be the guy who starts crying during the fucking song because of the background of the situation. But I internalized it, and I just thought, I was just giving myself a pep talk, going like, just be a pro, man. Just sing it like, you know, just do it and do it as, and honor your mom, and she'll love it. And so we're hanging out in the dressing room right before we're about to go out and do this live stream. And it's me and Why Not and a drummer named Brian Griffin and my friend Kevin Marks, no relation, playing guitar. And the director says, okay, guys. Now, wait, I got to back up a second. So we're just hanging out and we hadn't seen each other in a while, right? Me and the band. And I had just moved to a community. I won't say the name of it, but it's a community where a lot of people have horses and they're really into, they have stables and arenas and stuff like that. So Why Not says, oh yeah, that there's a lot of like horses and stuff like there. I said, yeah. I said, there's like, it's for horse people. And Why Not said, do you mean centaurs? And I went, yes, Why Not? I mean, that's what you see everywhere you look. It's just centaurs. So 45 minutes later, we're done hanging out in the dressing room. It's time to do this live stream thing. We all get up to follow the director out. Why Not just happens to be the last one before me out. And I tapped him on the shoulder and I said, dude, I need a favor. I just need to tell somebody this real quick. That song that we're going to do for my mom, My mom is like really bad. It's like really, it's like nearing the end. And I'm frightened that I'm going to choke up. And I feel like if I just say it to somebody, then it'll help me calm down. And Why Not put his hand on my shoulder and he said, just think of centaurs. And I swear to God, man.
It worked.
I got to this one line that I was dreading in the song because it really hits home for me with the situation that she's in. And I just thought of centaurs and I sailed through it. And at the end of the song on the live stream, I turned around and I looked at Why Not and I just went, I owe you one, man.
You know, you can only be so professional and you can't control certain
things.
And, you know, that's a heavy thing you just described, that type of song. But you want to be connected to the songs you're singing. But a song like that, you can't be too connected.
No,
you'll never get through it. So you know, live stream is different. If you're playing a show, yeah, look at the t-shirt booth when you're singing.
Right.
Find something to focus on and think about the bus ride later if you have to, if this next song is too emotional or something.
Did you do any live stream during the pandemic?
You know, I didn't. First of all,
you would have hated it.
I didn't like the idea of it. I didn't have a record out at the time.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about not being famous for 20 minutes. Like, I mean, there was just this big flood of doing it and everybody's asked plenty. And I was like, I'm kind of enjoying not doing it. And, you know, I know it got better, but in the beginning, everything sounded bad. Everybody looked bad. Like, why are we doing this? I don't understand the need. I was trying to stay alive like most people. Performing was not on my mind. And I was also, you know, finishing this record. And I'm somebody who's pretty comfortable just not, you know, doing my own thing until there's a record to be out there and talking, living my life. And in between records, and everybody I spoke to seemed kind of burdened by it. I mean, it didn't seem like everybody was loving it. Okay, why don't you just not do it?
No, I was not. I was kind of dreading it. And the reality of it was exactly what I thought it would be, which was that it was not fun at all.
Well, certainly when people are you know, jamming in squares on the screen and they're in different parts of the country. Like, that's just weird to me anyway. You know, I mean, I don't think I ever heard of Zoom before all this, but I think it was around.
I think it was around, but nobody had ever heard of it.
I'm glad that by the time we had this record out that we were able to do different things and we can hopefully get back to playing. I think I have shows coming up like a lot of people, but, you know, I would have done anything I needed to if I had a record out. I just didn't.
Yeah. How was the production process? By the way, before you answer that, I just want to say one more thing, a couple things. One of the wonderful elements on this album was something I thought, Jesus Christ, I haven't heard this in a long time. Intros with actual sort of motifs and melodies that start the song rather than just sort of like a chord or a fade in chord and then you're into the verse. It was like, it reminds me of like, I've worked so hard. I felt a kinship to a lot of this album because, first of all, recording with live players rather than machines, which I've done both, and I've embraced, you know, working in the box a little bit, but it's nothing like getting together with people and making a recording of the song I made up in my head. But the attention to melodies, not within the melody of the song, not just riffs, but just parts that were so melodic and beautiful and cool. And I love that there's a real versatility across the album. There's obviously a consistency, but you're kind of like going down a few hallways that I didn't expect. And the one song, oh shit, there's a seventh chord. You used a seventh chord. I hadn't heard a seventh chord on a song in ages. I could go on and on about how much I love the record, but.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's most, you know, it's, for me, it's the thing I like the most is writing the songs and going to the studio and hearing them come to life. And this was a great group of people, you know, to make the record with. We both spent a lot of time working with people who are variations of friends and musicians, and they're happy to be working today and get a session. And yeah, the compliments, you know, you hear them, they kind of like, you know, they kind of move them along and say things. And but that's different than when you actually are just doing something like this and the song comes out of the speakers and you can feel in the room that it's genuine and you're all part of something. And it's just the part that I look forward to the most. And as far as the intros and all that stuff, I don't know. Sometimes you just have to go around on the verse chords for, you know, a couple bars to get into the song. Other times, you know, not having some kind of intro, it's a missed opportunity. But it's not always natural to find that. Sometimes you just have to start the song. But, you know, and it's not like we can all listen to the Beatles and just be like annoyed, like how every song, they took advantage of every single opportunity to make the most in that 3.5 minutes. And we're not all that gifted to be doing something like that. But,
yeah,
you know, I like those things and I'm always aware of it. And, you know, it happens fast making a record. I don't labor records. I don't spend 6 months going back to them and rethinking them. They don't, you know, they're not, I'd rather make more of them than sit on one too often. You know, and then you're done and then you get your mixes and you're like, damn it, you know, we just really a fade out? Really? We faded out? Really? As a songwriter, I like a lot, Paul Westerberg, I think his line was, you know, a fade out is a cop out. And so, I mean, and every time I fade out, sometimes, you know, you just gave a look, you kind of raised your eyebrows. Like sometimes, you know, I'm sorry, Paul, that's all I get. That's all we can do. There is no great
right.
ending here.
And Shelby Lynn is on the album.
Yeah.
Are you guys pals from a while
no,
back?
No, you know what? Actually, we'd never met. You know, we run in certain or similar circles. But no, we hadn't. And that was very organic. That was one of the songs on the record, Darlin' Hold On. Butch and I had talked about having a woman sing with me. And Val McCallum, who's playing guitar, he plays with her quite a bit. And I think he mentioned her name. And I was like, it hadn't occurred to me. And it's always better when you can do it that way. It's not enough to call on your favorite singer because you may not have any chemistry. You can't just have an agent call somebody else. So if it's organic and it starts out like something like asking Val, would you mind just get in touch with her, see if she's, you know, she's around if she wanted to. And thankfully she did. And, you know, I think we gave her one song and, you know, she came in and really she was done in like 15 minutes. And because she's just that good.
Yeah.
And yeah. I know your background is a lot of harmony singing and that's a, you know, I'm a lead singer really. I can ghost you in a chorus or something like that, but you know, no one's hiring me to find those notes. And you know, someone says to me, you go to the third, go to the fifth, like I'm, you know, it's not my strength. But Shelby's like, she's both, you know, she's a tremendous singer songwriter but she and her sister Alison Moore, they just sing like they've been trained to be harmony singers. But I think it's they're just gifted in doing both. But she was done so quickly that just kept giving her more songs as long as she's having a good time. And I'm glad because it really, she becomes kind of a member of the group on it. You know, if it was one thing, that'd be great too. An isolated song would be great, you know, as a guest vocalist, but being on four songs, you know, you're connected throughout the record. And I'm really happy that it worked out like that.
It's really, really good. Did she get the first song that you had planned for her to sing on in advance to kind of get a feel for it? Or
yeah, and you know, again, you're a different, you know, you can do different things than I can do. Like, I'll need some time myself. Somebody wants me to come in and sing, like, I'm gonna have to screw around for a little bit, and don't, just doesn't matter how many numbers and things you throw at me. Like, I'm just, it's gonna have to be a connection of vibration in my head to find the notes. You know, telling me which note to go to, it's not gonna be very helpful. I'll need some time to get comfortable with the song. But we'd given her the song, and I'm sure it was very easy for her to, I know it was easy for her because she sang the song in 15 minutes and then we just kept giving her more songs. And it was just as easy right then with the brand new song she hadn't heard. She would get to the chorus, she'd be kind of humming to herself, and then she'd say, roll the tape. And it was, you know, it was miraculous, really. I can't do anything like that, so I can't relate. I can do different things, but I can't do that, you know. You know, she's a contralto, you know, she's got a really unique voice and an identity to her voice.
Yeah.
But that, you know, it's a really strong, deep voice that complements me, I think, pretty well. You could probably mutate your voice depending on who you're singing with, I'm going to guess, right? You probably have a lot of voices in you, textures and
I do. That's kind of how I made my living early on. And it's also because I loved sort of trying to mimic other singers, you know? I don't think I found my voice until I was making my first record, probably. I was getting work as a background singer and I needed to sometimes sing the whole chorus completely falsetto to ghost a woman's voice or change the tone or whatever. I actually like doing my own background vocals a lot because I try to just, I'll do a pass where it's me, I'm just singing the part. And then if I'm going to double that part, I pretend that I'm, you know, Michael McDonald or...
Yes. Well, who was it you actually mentioned? I'm spacing. You said in your book that they had you come in. It was a live record. I think you had to come in and just, they wanted you to sing just a word or a line. And so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Barbra Streisand had just done this live concert and Barry Gibb had showed up to do Guilty, the song Guilty with her. And apparently he forgot to sing the one line. And I was working in the studio down the hall from where they were mixing. And Barbra Streisand walked into the studio. I forget who I was working with. I was just singing background vocals on something. And she comes in and of course, you know, it was like harps played and light hit her and, you know, not really, but it seemed like that because Streisand just walked into the studio unannounced and we're all like, oh, what the hell is Barbra Streisand doing in here? And she's looking around. She goes, is there somebody named Richard here? And I raised my hand. She says, they say you can sound like people. Can you sound like Barry Gibb? And before I could even say, well, I don't know, she took my hand and took me down the hall and I knew the song. So I just she said, do your best. And I went, it ought to be illegal. And I did it one take and she went, that's it. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, that's funny. Well, that's a talent, you know, you out of necessity you develop, you know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have thought of that. It's really useful to do your own harmonies and change your voice for the different parts, your own textures and your tones. That's also one of the funnier parts of your book. I thought when you pitched her the song, she said, "I will not, because I will not be here. I will not be right here waiting for anybody." Was that her line?
Yeah.
And it's like I don't imagine. Maybe you caught up with her later. I don't imagine she regretted not cutting the song. Did she?
No, we've been friends for a long time. We did work together a few times, but over the last 15 years, I don't even know how we started socializing. But we started spending a lot of time together and I'm really close to her husband, Jim, who's a really awesome guy. And every once in a while, it'll come up that she rejected, you know, the song that's my biggest song I've ever written. And she looks, every time we joke about it, she goes, I still wouldn't cut that. I would never say that.
That story is great. If she sung the song, you wouldn't have a story.
Right.
You wouldn't have your trademark successful song.
I've actually had people, without irony, ask me, well, don't you think she regretted not doing that song? It was so big. And I was like, what? Like, are you kidding me? You think Barbra Streisand gives a shit that she passed on that? Like, are you kidding?
Well, maybe she could have been the next Barbra Streisand if she just cut that song.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks for listening to the Talkhouse podcast. And thanks to Richard Marks and Jacob Dylan for chatting. If you liked what you heard, please follow Talkhouse on your favorite podcasting service as well as your favorite social media services. This episode was produced by Melissa Kaplan, and the Talkhouse theme is composed and performed by The Range. See you next time.